Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Academic Life channel here on New Books Network. I'm your host, Dr. Dana Malone. Today, we'll be talking to Dr. Heather Wagoner, Director of Student Engagement and Campus Life at Virginia Tech, and we'll be talking about her experience of failing her doctoral qualifying exam. Heather, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Dana. I'm so excited, and this is an honor. Thank you.
Well, we are thrilled to have you with us today, Heather. And I wonder if you could begin by telling us a bit about yourself.
Sure. Thanks for asking. So it's always such a interesting question when somebody tell you about yourself. I'm going to do what I normally don't do. I'm not going to talk about my work first. I'm going to talk about the other great things in my life. So, I wear a lot of hats and I have a lot of roles and titles in my life. Most importantly to me, I'm a wife and a mother. I'm a daughter, I'm a niece, I'm an aunt, I'm a sister, I'm a friend. I am the CEO of the Wagoner household. So there's a lot of different roles. And, you know, I tell you, sometimes those roles bolster me up. Sometimes they feel overwhelming, but I carry them with me always. And I think they ultimately ground me and who I am and who I want to be and the values that I hold. But some other pieces too. I love musical theater. I love it so much. Lin-Manuel Miranda is a genius in my brain. I love dancing and a good mystery book. I like pizza and movie nights. We try to do that every Friday night in our house. And I always look forward to that and devouring popcorn. And one of my most favorite things is spending time on the beach at 5 p.m. That for whatever reason is like the perfect time for me on the beach. And I just love it and long for it. And it's where I think I feel most at peace in some ways. So I always value those times as well. So that's outside of work, a few things about me. But in terms of also the great work life. So something you should know about me is that both of my parents went to James Madison University, otherwise known as JMU. And so my life was predetermined. I would also be going to JMU. I have a picture, I'm on my dad's shoulders and I'm in a JMU sweatshirt and pom-poms at like age two. So really not only was going to JMU ingrained, but going to college was ingrained. This was just a thing, that I was going to do. And, they were right. So I did in fact go to JMU. I majored in communication studies and I minored in theater. I was one of those students that's very typical, I guess, for those of us in student affairs. I was highly involved in my residence hall. I was a student ambassador. I was in a sorority. I helped start a service organization. So, did a lot of things outside the classroom. Honestly, that excited me more sometimes than was going on inside the classroom. But I just loved being involved. I loved being around other student leaders, the mentors. It filled me with joy and hope when I was at JMU. And I had the opportunity to study abroad between my junior and senior year that summer in Ireland, which hands down one of the best decisions of my life. I wish everyone could study abroad. But that decision also meant I had to get a job senior year because I would normally have worked in the summer, and I got a job at our college union. And that's really where everything shifted for me, where I learned that this isn't just a passion, this can actually be a career. And so I quickly started trying to figure out, well, how do I actually make this a career? Because I thought I was going to be in public relations and I didn't know how you get started in higher education. And a lot of fateful twists happened, and I actually was hired on as the first out-of-state admissions counselor for Longwood University, which is a beautiful, small public institution here in Virginia. And that made me realize, yep, this is for me. I'm hooked. I want to help students find where they can fully grow and emerge as their whole self. that was it. So I applied and was admitted to the higher ed program at University of South Carolina, and was the graduate assistant for Carolina Productions, which was their programming board. And that was it. I mean, that really, it's why I've stayed in student involvement. It's been, you know, part of it the whole time for me. Just this love for it. But I've made the best friends at South Carolina. We're still in touch. We try to do girls trips every 5 years. It was amazing. And South Carolina really propelled me out into the world for my first job post-master's was at University of Kentucky, Dana, where we met. And I'm so grateful for that. And I spent 10 years there in a number of roles, meeting amazing students and professionals. And it's where I started my PhD journey, which I know we're going to talk about. So I've hopped not very much. I really, you know, invest where I am, but I'm so grateful to be a part of the higher ed community. It's tough right now. It's been tough, but I remain hopeful about what the college experience can do for our students and for our nation and for our world. I think at its finest, higher education is really the place where you get to grow and mess up and flounder and succeed and figure out who you are and what your values are and how you want to be a part of our culture and our community. And that's exciting to me. How amazing to be a part of someone's journey like that. So that's me in a nutshell. And now I'm at Virginia Tech and I'm living my best life back in our home state. Just so grateful to be here.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing about yourself. And as Heather mentioned, we do know each other, and I always like to let our listeners know when I am talking with someone that I know personally. So Heather and I do go way back to the University of Kentucky. We met in our doc program there, and we were studying at the same time. And I don't think we ever actually worked in the same office, but we crossed over in our classes very much. And yeah, we got to be friends, and it was just, it was really lovely. So many wonderful people. As our listeners know, I've had several people from the University of Kentucky on because it was just a wonderful place of colleagues and mentors, and just a wonderful program and a wonderful place to study and work. And a lot of those relationships, they still sustain me, and I'm doing work with a lot of folks from that time. I still have mentors from that time. And just such rich, I think of my time there as just so rich in relationships and connections. And I'm so grateful for that. And you being one, Heather, and I'm so honored that you came on the show. And we've been trying to schedule this episode for months and months. And so I'm thrilled that we're actually getting to have this conversation on air. And I want to start before we dive in by just thanking you for your willingness to share your experience, because it really does take vulnerability and courage to discuss our failures and our setbacks publicly. I'd say that across the board. And then I think add in the academy, and it's even more so, because in the academy, we really just want to talk about all the things we do well and our successes. It's really counterintuitive to talk about our quote-unquote failures in the academy. And I use quotes there because I've done some other episodes on failure, quote-unquote, because I don't really – there's so much stigma attached to that word, and I like the idea of missteps or setbacks, things that, you know, don't go as we planned, but we can turn them around into lessons and successes, and sometimes we just need to change course. So I just want to thank you and honor the vulnerability and the courage that you're displaying today by coming on the show and talking about this experience. So thank you, Heather.
Absolutely. Thanks for saying that. I appreciate that a lot.
So let's start with a little context about your doc program and your experiences leading up to your qualifying exams, just to sort of help set the stage for our listeners and our discussion today.
Sure. Yeah. So, I started taking classes in the doc program at Kentucky in 2007. So I had been at Kentucky for 2 years. I was working full time, super demanding, you know, job working with students. But I really became inspired. I started seeing some other leaders and I was like, maybe I want to do that someday. And I felt and still feel that a PhD helps open doors across the academy, including in student affairs. When you think about executive level administrative kind of roles. So I honestly like did it the way I would not recommend, which is I was like, I'm just going to do this. Like I didn't have a vision for myself as a doctoral student. I just was like, what's interesting to me? What fits my schedule? I'm the type of person, like, I'm curious about everything. I just find people neat and their stories neat and information is cool. And so that was kind of how I approached my doctoral program. And I remember Dr. Jane Jensen, who's amazing. She was like, that's awesome. When you're a student in our classes, it's not so great now, because I just was interested in like everything. And I, at one point, was going to try to study like how media portrays higher education and how that then affects expectations of our incoming students and their families, which I still think would be a cool project. I was kind of all over the place. And then I really started settling in on this idea of wanting to explore the experiences of student women leaders. There was just very little research out about this. I was interested in the cross-section of gender and leadership. I was interested in the cross-section of student development in this specific time in their lives, where for some women, this may be the first time they've had a positional leadership position, some of which were very public for young people. And that's ultimately where I landed, was on that topic. But I tell you, Dana, I was kind of all over the place. And I'm sure I was maddening as a student for some, but also had the most encouraging faculty. And I did all of this part-time. So I worked full-time the whole time I was a student. All the way through, I was a part-time student, taking about 6 credit hours a semester, but that takes a while. So it was a long journey. From the beginning to walking was 10 years. That's a decade for those who count it in a different way. It's a long time. I was messy, I guess. But nonetheless, that was how I did it.
And I want to note here, so the program is educational policy and evaluation. And that program, it wasn't, you had a mix, as you do in a lot of higher ed focused programs, where there are folks who were, going the scholarly route. They wanted to be professors. And then there was a lot of folks who were going to be in like administrative leadership in the academy. And so there was, the program was split. There was a lot of students who were full-time students and a lot of students who worked full-time in different roles, both at that institution and other local institutions. And so, that's not uncommon in a higher ed program. And so, that experience of going part-time and working alongside your academic work, a lot of people did that in our program, and is no small feat, especially in a student affairs, when you're working a full-time student affairs job, which tends to be very demanding and after hours and weekends and all of that. So that was just, I wanted to kind of set up the experience that and where you were. And I appreciate your vulnerability and even your reflection on, where you were when you started that, of just kind of being, just open and all over, which sometimes is a wonderful trait to have, and other times can work to our disadvantage.
Yeah, you should definitely use it sparingly at times. But I'll say too, Dana, it made me think when you were talking, the University of South Carolina program was very traditional. My master's program, I felt like, was a very traditional student affairs program, was practitioner based, right? Like, we're learning and then we're going to put it into practice. And that's what I was used to. And, and I just graduated in that program in 2005, 2 years later, started the Kentucky program. And they're just vastly different programs, equal merit, both wonderful programs, but so different. And I don't know if I ever fully processed, well, this is a totally different experience. Like, by the time I realized that, I was halfway through, and it's like, maybe I just probably made assumptions and just jumped in head first. But also just contrasting two very different experiences.
Yeah, no, good point. So let's go back to that day, if you would, of your first attempt at the qualifying exam. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that experience that day.
So it's not my favorite day, but it's an important day to talk about and remember. So for us, with our qualifying exams, we're given 4 questions from our faculty, give or take. Each question is going to be about a 30-page paper or lit review. And Once you kind of get your questions, you're set off into the world. And I think I had a year as a part-time student. And I think to some extent, even probably when I went into that space, because you have no feedback, right? You don't know how the faculty are responding to your work. You're just going in there and you're having a scholarly conversation. That makes it sound very intimidating for me, scholarly conversation. For me, I remember I'm sitting out in the hallway on the floor, like all dressed up on the floor. There's really nowhere to sit. It's very public. Oh, what are you doing here? Oh, hey, that kind of thing. And well, I'm going to sit for my quals. A lot of my friends knew, a lot of my colleagues knew this was happening. And you go into the space. I was really intimidated by this space. Didn't know if I was on the right footing or not. And honestly, the actual conversation, that one, my first go with quals, I couldn't even tell you what happened in that room because that's not the memory that sticks out for me. The memory is what happened after. So I go back out in that same hallway that I was waiting in before, again, no privacy. And I was out there like a real long time. And I was like, something's not going great. And like my husband, who was not, no, he was my husband at the time, Ryan was, checking in on me. And I'm like, I don't know, this isn't great. I don't think this is great. I don't know though. And my chair at the time came out and was very kind. But ultimately I did not pass. And we're going to regroup, right? We're going to regroup. It was when I went back in the space with the folks on my committee, everyone was very kind. We're going to regroup. There wasn't any like, you just can't hack this. Like I never felt like that was the tone. I think the tone was, this isn't your best work. We know you can do better. We're going to work with you. So they took my questions from 4 to 3, so two faculty members combined questions, relooked at some things. I think one question was retooled altogether. So everyone was kind of working with me, but then ultimately I had to make a choice as to whether I wanted to try again or not. And of course I was also on a clock with that and couldn't have forever. And so I left that space completely demoralized. I went to my car and just bawled. I felt such shame. I wasn't even like I disappointed myself. I think part of it was like, it was more about shame. All these people are going to know I failed. I'm not someone who fails often. I'm a go-getter. I'm a type A. I'm an achiever. I was on the honor organization at South Carolina. Like, I'm not like, what is this? There's just a whole lot of shame that I felt that day and just humiliation. I didn't want to see anyone. I don't want to talk to anyone. I didn't want to talk to Ryan. I didn't want to talk to my mom. I wanted to just bury my face in a pillow and crawl under covers and not be seen. I wanted to be invisible. It was a really painful day. And I sure that day was not like, I shall proceed. Like I was in mourning, I think, to some degree that day, at some level of what I had thought was going to happen next. I had to let go of that and recalibrate. And that was in, I think it was either late April or early May, because my wedding anniversary is in May and we had a trip planned to Asheville for our 1 year anniversary. And I think this was weeks later and I was still carrying like that shame. Like my husband's like, you have to let it go. Like you have to take a breath. But like, I just was carrying that shame and disappointment. I couldn't shed it. It took a while. It took probably 2-3 months before I could kind of shed that and think about what do I want to do next?
Well, and thank you for sharing that so candidly. I want to get to, we're going to talk about what you did next, but I want to just linger here for a minute and acknowledge and just kind of unpack the significance. So how, at that point, talk to us about how long, because in my mind, I'm thinking about it's an investment at that point. How long had you been in the program? So the qualifying exams and this, every program is a little bit different, but it comes after your coursework. It's your comps. For some folks, they call it the comps, right? It's after, and in our program, it was after coursework, but before your dissertation proposal. So you had to pass your quals or your comps in between there. So what was the time frame? How long had you been taking classes and in the program at that point?
Yeah, I started classes fall 2007. And this was spring 2011. So it had been a while. I mean, I think I took almost that whole year to write. I got married May 2010. I got like a new opportunity at work. Like there was a lot going on where I finished my coursework and moved to Qualls as well. Like a lot of big life things. And so, you know, to be honest, like I couldn't tell you, like, I don't even really remember writing my Qualls the first time. Everything, spoiler alert, everything goes back to when I tried again. That's the memory that I keep for whatever reason. Maybe it's because it's tethered to a happier ending. I'm not sure. But yeah, I mean, this was a long investment in working full time and doing this part time. I mean, it was my life. I was either working or studying about my work environment, but I wanted to, you know, and so it was pretty dominating. And so then to have such a setback like that after this investment, it's like, well, come on, man. Like at some point too, I'm like, I want to be done. I don't want this to be my life for forever. And that light at the end of the tunnel, it was like, it just went dark. And I couldn't see my, at that moment, I couldn't see my way out.
Yeah. And so I asked that question just to kind of pose the, or juxtapose the, you have years of investment, like mm-hmm. 5+ years of investment in this program. And in one day, I'm sure you're contemplating, is this just over? Mm-hmm. Did you ever think about quitting? Was that an option on the table for you after?
In theory, yeah. I want to say one other quick thing, Dana, and I want to answer that question. I'll also say for me, Qualls were the loneliest time I'd ever felt in my academic career. It was just lonely. You were just all on your own. And that was such a different experience. And I even think about students coming up now, right? They're even more accustomed to group work and we're going to do this together. And it was just a terribly lonely experience. And I don't think I don't thrive in isolation. And I learned that, I think, through this experience as well. But to your question, did I think about quitting? Yes, girl, I thought about quitting. I mean, I don't consider myself a quitter, but I was also like, is this really worth it? Like, is this really worth what I feel? Like what I feel? And there were two substantial conversations. The first, Dana, was with you, whether you remember or not, it was at your kitchen table. And Dr. Jensen had recommended I talk with you because you just had such a fluid process to your work. And she thought that could help me kind of organize and think differently and actually maybe even develop more of a process for myself if I chose to try again, which was so valuable because it made me for the first time feel like, wait, maybe I can do this. And I hadn't felt that in a long time. And the other conversation was my friend Amy from grad school. And, you know, I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. And she was like, you do though. She's like, where do you want to take your career? Like, what do you want to do? How do you want to invest? And, you know, really started kind of, I had to admit, like, I'm not ready to also close the door on what I could do to help reshape higher education, to help shape student engagement and allowing students to have these experiences that I genuinely believe can be transformational for some. I just didn't want to shut the door on what could be. And she was like, so yes, then you got to buckle up, girl, let's go. You know, and she kind of gave me that kick in the pants that I needed. Cause at that point it was probably November or December. And I was taking my sweet time with my first question, still kind of trying to figure out, do I want to do this or not? Knowing I had two more questions to finish and I needed to get done by April. So those two moments, I think kind of pulled me out of that darkness and pulled me out of the fog and allowed me to get some clarity on, all right, it's now or never. So we're going to do this or not. And I was at a fork in the road and I had to make a decision.
I want to just respond to a couple things there. One, as you were talking and I was thinking about my question, and language is really important to me. Lexicon is really important to me. And so even my question of quitting, I want to like correct myself and say, I don't even like that word because quitting implies some really negative thing. And it's really just for some folks, for all of us, we have experiences that cause us to change direction, to go a different direction than we might have planned. And so that is a better way to frame that question than saying quitting. I think it feels like quitting to a lot of us when we stop and change direction, especially to those of us who are type A achiever people, right? Like it feels like the ultimate of quitting. But for listeners out there who are at their own crossroads, sometimes a change of direction is just what's necessary. And there are experiences in our lives that propel us in that. And I'm just going to take a quick moment here to share a story of another friend that I had. She was a yoga instructor in my yoga studio in Lexington, which was one of my favorite spaces as well. In that time of my life and in that city. And she was in, I believe, a sociology PhD program. And so I say she's a yoga teacher. She was my yoga teacher because she'd walk around and she had this gorgeous tattoo of a dove on her top of her foot. And so I would see it as she walked around the yoga studio. And she told the story of how she got that. So she got that tattoo after she decided to leave her PhD and I think it was sociology and was her area. And she changed courses in life. And that tattoo is her representation of just a different decision and a different path. And she, I believe, was at the qual stage as well, or ABD. I mean, she was far into the program and just decided to make a change. And she had that tattoo on her foot as a reminder of the peace and in that choice, in that changing direction. So, you know, we're so accustomed to some of these kind of negative connotation words around our choices and quitting being one of those. So I just wanted to note that I'm just correcting myself even on air that I don't prefer to use that kind of language, just like I don't prefer the word failure. There's so much stigma attached to failure and quitting and those kinds of things. And sometimes it's just a change of direction and change of decision. And that's what's absolutely necessary. The other thing I wanted to say was to comment on your comment about how the quals were the loneliest time for you in the program. And I wanted to just affirm that as I have reflected over the course of, after having gone from start to finish and finishing, when I look back on my program as well, especially after the dissertation defense, I always say and have said that the hardest hurdle was the qualifying exam. Because for exactly what you said, you're completely alone in it. No one has reviewed your work. You have no feedback. For me, I did it because I was a full-time grad student. I did it in 3 months. I did it over the summer. I got my questions at the start of the summer and I wrote all summer. And then I sat after, and you have no idea. And I remember I would often tell the story of there were days I would sit and I had a conference room in the ed library all day, every day in the summer. And I would, some days I would go in there and I would be like, this is amazing. This is so good. And then other days I was like looking at the same paper and I was like, I think this is junk. I don't know. This is horrible. You know, it just depended on the day as to how confident I was feeling or how horrible I was feeling about it. And I had no feedback, right? You kind of just take these questions in isolation and go write. And you have no feedback until you turn them in and go sit in that defense. And then you get to hear what people think about what you've spent months of your life doing and your work, which is vastly different than the dissertation defense where you're working with your chair and they're giving you feedback and you're making tweaks. So by the time you get into that room, you are the expert and it is a scholarly conversation and not, you know, at least for me, it wasn't this drilling, right? Of like, and so I just wanted to affirm what you're saying, that I think that's the experience for a lot of people. The quals can be, depending on how they're set up, but especially the way it was set up in our program, it's a very lonely, you have no feedback, you're just doing the best you can. And then, you know, you hope for the best. So yeah, I just wanted to affirm that. So you talk about that, you know, that fork in the road, and you did decide, you reached out to a few people, me and another friend, and you started to get a vision for what you could do and what's next. So talk to us a little bit about that decision and what your plan was moving forward. Once you kind of had those conversations, what was your plan? What was your plan for success? What was your plan for doing this differently or how to approach this or yourself or, you know, the whole thing differently.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, I talked, of course, with Ryan, and I knew, you know, still working full time, like this was going to take nights and weekends, especially to get done. And so I built a schedule for myself, and I had a schedule in terms of when I needed to try to be done with this part of the draft and that. And yeah, I actually used, bounced back and forth between the main library and the education library and got a little more settled in some of these smaller nooks. I went to campus to write as opposed to writing at home. So I think I could separate the scholarly work I needed to do from just being home and being in a more of a state of rest. I certainly also, I think I developed more of a plan in terms of understanding and having a better grasp on, you know, the lit review and having, because I hadn't done a lit review. I don't know if I'd ever done one, which may sound crazy to people. Probably does. I don't know if I'd ever done lit review until I was asked to do one for Qualls. I mean, Dana, I think you lent me a book and I was like, oh, this isn't that bad. But right, like I was like naive almost, and I had to teach myself some things that I think people probably take for granted or assume I had a skill set or an experience that I didn't have. So some of it was also doing some education for myself on what it looks like to write and to do this well. And once I kind of got grounded a little bit more, I could feel my confidence going up. And I felt like I was writing something worth reading, which was exciting, but I really had to buckle down. And I tell you, you know, like I said, I kind of was taking it slow. And really come January, I was like, all right, this is it. Well, January, 2012, I also got pregnant with our son. And so, the first 5 months I'm pregnant, I'm also writing my Qualls for the second time. And this was it. This was it. You don't get a third time. This was it. And I just had to stay focused. And I remember I was in the main library, we call it Willie T at University of Kentucky. I had myself all set up, ready to go for the day, just eating an apple. And all of a sudden I was like, ugh. And I ran to the bathroom, threw up because, you know, first trimester, like it's no joke sometimes. Got some water and went back and kept writing, because I was on a roll and wanted to keep going. It wasn't easy. And it was hard because in some ways I also felt honestly like I'm not neglecting my pregnancy in a bad way. I was healthy, but like maybe wasn't taking in all the little moments because I'm growing a human while growing my Qualls. I mean, it was all happening at once. And in some ways I wonder if knowing that, like, if I can grow a human, I can pass these damn Qualls. Like I can, there was some empowerment maybe a bit too that I was hanging on to, and a focus. Like now I genuinely have a due date. I have a due date for these Qualls because I got a due date for a person that I'm going to raise. And so I have to admit, I think that also for me, I had set a good foundation, and then that just said, yep, we're going to build right here, right now, because this is what we've got and we're going to make it work. So I definitely think getting some good guidance, not being as intimidated, like trying to seek out like what is intimidating me and fix it, address it so that I am not the hurdle. I don't want to be my own hurdle. And so I definitely think some self-reflection was critical for me to move forward as well and to heal a little bit. Otherwise, I was going to be right back in the place I was April 2011, sitting in that hallway knowing this did not go great. Hmm.
So talk to us a little bit about the second time you sat for your quals. What was that like? And how was it different from the first time?
Oh, yeah, Dina, it was so great. Well, for starters, no one knew I was pregnant. So I walk in 5 months pregnant and they're all like, oh, you've been busy. And I'm like, busy with quals and raising a kid in my belly. Yep. So, I mean, I think it just, I was like, let's go. And I spoke with so much more confidence. I felt confident about what I wrote. I understood the material. It wasn't a surface level, oh my God, I read 3 articles, I hope they don't notice kind of feeling. It was really, I felt more of like, you know, masterful understanding of the contrasts I made or the observations I had. And at one point, one of the wonderful committee members said, I'd just love to hear your opinion on X. She's like, I'm just really curious. Like, I'd love to hear your opinion. And I felt like she genuinely wanted to hear my opinion, that this wasn't a test. This wasn't being drilled. This wasn't a setup. This was the start of a scholarly conversation. And I like, cause at first I was like, what does she want to hear? Honestly, I'm like, what do you want to hear? I will tell you anything. And when she was like, I just want to hear your opinion. Like, I'm not looking for anything. That like actually freed my mind at a whole nother level for the rest of that conversation. And I think I got better as time went on in that conversation. And I just remember, you know, I got to give it my all. And I left the room and I, you know, didn't sit on the floor that time. I think I kind of walked around the hallway a little bit. And it was like 5 minutes later, they came and grabbed me. And I walked in that room and Dr. Goldstein, who had been with me the whole time as well, looked at me and said, that is what we knew you could do. That was it. That's who we want to keep seeing. And like, I get goosebumps saying that. Like, I did it. I did it. And I did it in a way that not only, you know, that certainly they seemed satisfied and proud, which, right, this is a hurdle. That's part of what you're doing. But I could stand there and be proud. Not only of the work I did, but the fact that I just got up from being, you know, kicked down. I made a choice and that was the end result. It was an awesome day. I, being 5 months pregnant, then went and bought my first maternity dress and a cupcake to celebrate because I could not have a cocktail. I just was walking on cloud nine the rest of that day. I was, to this day, more than even the dissertation defense, which was fine, but honestly, it's not my favorite memory of the whole process either. It's that day. It's that day that's going to forever stick out to me as one of the most special day of the 10 years that I spent pursuing that PhD. More so than even walking across the stage. It's that day. It was redemption in its own way, I guess. And that felt good.
I started to ask you, what's the meaning of that day as you, even now, as you talk about it, what's that meaning of that day that you hold?
I think to some extent it is redemption. But even that feels kind of shallow. I think it, I don't know, like all the shame, all the humiliation I felt, I was really proud. I was proud. I could have made a different decision, but once I buckled in and said, well, I'm going to do this, I did it. And I did it well. And I did it in a place, in a way that I could be proud of. That felt really good. It felt good. It was more than redemption. It was genuine pride that, damn, look at what I did. I did that. Sorry if I can, I'm like said the D word twice. I'm sorry, listeners. I get excited. I'm so sorry, listeners.
Well, I think too, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, but what I hear is in some ways, you know, it's, and you, we can never know, right? Because it, this is how it went down, but that the experience and the meaning from that day, and it sounds like the confidence that you gained in that second exam day was so much greater than it probably would have been had that happened on, you know, just one round, that it was because of, not in spite of, and that's why redemption maybe doesn't feel as meaningful, is because it's because of what happened the first time. And because of that journey that you had to walk that made the experience of that second day that much more meaningful for you, that much more defining in a way for you. I'm just speculating based on what I'm hearing you say. I don't know if that resonates or not.
No, it resonates completely. You're right on. I mean, you're right on. And you know, it took courage just to get back up. that was not easy. It took courage because I could have been humiliated again. I didn't know. I didn't know how it would end. I had hopes, of course, but you know, it's like I bet on myself and I won. So there's a lot of pride still. I mean, I'm sitting in my office looking outside our beautiful campus and I'm just kind of staring out. Like, there's a lot of pride. I'm proud of myself. And that will remain. Finishing what I started, albeit the setbacks and the heartache and the confusion and the isolation and the frustration, finishing what I started is really meaningful to me. I can hang my hat on that at the end of the day.
So how did what you went through with your quals, how did that impact the dissertation stage for you, or did it?
Oof, it did. It did in a few, well, for starters, as soon as I left that space and got myself a cupcake, I was like, I'm done with this for a while. And so actually I checked out for about a year and a half. I went through the rest of my pregnancy in the first year of our son's life without touching anything for my dissertation. And so in some ways, it was a similar kind of experience where it's like, okay. And then I started plugging away and you know, I had my first three chapters and things were going well and I was doing my research. And then I got an opportunity to come to Virginia Tech. And I started this job in July 2015. And Dr. Jensen, my chair, was like, please just try to eke out a first draft before you leave. And I'm like, totally did not do that. And so she knew, she was wise. I mean, right? I'm trying to learn a new job. I'm a first-time director and I set it aside again for a year. So there was a lot of starts and stops with my dissertation. And in some ways, kind of similar to the quals, right? I mean, different reasons, but that start and stop that happened with quals too, and that the need to refocus and to buckle down. And it came to that point where Jane was like, we got to do this. Like, there's a clock. You got to do this. And so I had to do the same kind of thing. I had to, anything that was intimidating and getting in my way, I had to, you know, try to clear out. The difference this time, of course, is she was amazing. And I could actually talk to somebody who was invested in this work with me and could guide more. But I worked every night except for Friday night for 6 months straight to finish this. I was in my office for 12 hours every Saturday, every Sunday. I only ate with my family. That's about the only time I saw them. My son was three. So when your three-year-old's asking, when are you going to be done with your project? When are you going to be done with work? Like, that's motivating as well. I had to buckle down. It was time. I was either going to, once again, I was either going to finish this thing or it wasn't. But we were there. I was looking, you know, looking at that finish line and can I cross it? So in some ways, you know, and what the quals experience I think did for my dissertation is I knew I could do it because I'd done it before. Again, a very different experience because you have, in this case, I had Jane, who was just a wonderful cheerleader who was reading, love this. What does this mean? Let's rethink this whole thing, you know, and it felt a lot more collaborative. And just somebody else to talk through things with. So that was vastly different. But in terms of the process itself, yeah, I had to clear the way so that I could finish what I started.
Hmm. So if there are dissertation advisors and faculty members listening to this episode, what would you say to them? What can you offer them as someone who went through this as a student?
The first thing, I've been thinking about this a lot today, Dina, give people a private room to wait when they're waiting to find out if they passed quals or their dissertation. Like, having to just stand in public with everyone all up in your business, we don't need to add that to people. I just don't feel like we need to add that. And that may seem small, but just give somebody space so they can take their deep breaths and have their feelings. And it's not literally in a hallway. I think that if you've come this far, I think students deserve that. And we should give grace and give space for that. So it may seem silly, but it would have been meaningful to me. But you know, the other piece too, I think never underestimate how much your words mean and matter to your students, faculty out there and chairs and committee members. Those words meant a lot. And for me, you know, as soon as my first round was done and I failed my quals, the fact that they were immediately like, here's some things we can do to clear the way for round two. even that, like they weren't giving up on me. And not only were they not giving up on me, they were saying, let us also be part of the solution here to see what we can't do. That meant a lot. Like, again, as isolating as it was for that one moment, I did not feel alone. And that meant a lot. That meant a lot. And so I think those actions, what you say, when you say it, how you show support. I get the academic barriers. I get we're supposed to be proving something. And some of that I think is archaic and hurtful. And some perhaps is necessary. I don't know. I haven't explored that a lot in my own mind. But let's all remember, like, this is a human trying to do a really hard thing. And let's meet that space in that place with the compassion it deserves and demands.
Well said. So what advice do you have for students who are listening right now, who may be at their own, you know, fork in the road with their own educational journey or something else, I guess, another piece of their life for whom, you know, especially now that the past months and years have not gone as they expected. And I'm sure I know there's so many who have faced hurdles after hurdles and setbacks. What would you say to them?
Sure. I say to them first that I am so proud. I'm going to speak to them if I can, Dana. So I'm going to say that I'm so proud of you, person out there having a hard time. It's been a hard time. And I want you to give yourself grace and to give yourself compassion and to really have some self-reflection on what your values are and what matter to you most. And to the best of your ability, align your decisions with those values. If you are at a fork in the road, if you have had a setback or you're just trying to decide what's next for me, don't do what you think everyone else wants you to do. Do what is right for you, align with your values, do it with purpose, and know that you don't owe anyone anything. You owe it to yourself to do what is right for you. And sometimes it can feel like there are consequences to that. And ultimately, I think the harshest consequence would be to not listen and follow your instincts. I think we often want to bury our instincts or get validation before we follow those. And your smart cookie out there in the podcast world, don't doubt that. Follow your instincts and align with your values. Take a deep breath. And if it's your time to pivot, do it with no regrets. And if it's your time to keep going, find people like Dana and Amy and my husband and others that will quietly stand by you while you get the thing done. That's what I'd say.
Thank you. Heather, thank you so much for being on the show today, for sharing your story of failure and how you've come back from that experience and how you make meaning of that experience, and for sharing your advice. And just, it's just been wonderful to talk to you. Thank you so much.
This has been such a pleasure. This has just been a pleasure. And thank you, Dana, for thinking of me. I'm genuinely honored.
I'm Dr. Dana Malone. This is The Academic Life, and you've been listening to New Books Network. Please join us again.